Hello, welcome back to the unnamed podcast. I don't like the name of the podcast anymore. I think it's a bit shit. ETB podcast. It's literally just my initials with the word podcast after it. So until I think of a new name, it's untitled. But I think by the time you hear this podcast, I probably, hopefully, would have picked a name and it will have been changed. Anyway, welcome back. It's been a while since I've done one of these. I think I'd done one August last year with Oz Craggs. I think that was the last one I did. But we're back. No one's doing anything at the moment, so I thought probably a good time to get, you know, people chatting. So yeah, here we are. Anyway, this episode is with Joe Marsh. He is a producer and he does really well. He's like in his first year of doing it full time, which is crazy considering the circumstances that we're all going through. But yeah, we just basically talk about how he came into doing what he's doing now. We spoke quite a lot about social media and how he uses it as a business and marketing tool when he does it very well. So basically this episode is just me picking his brain and trying to learn how he does it so I can do it myself. But yeah, I spoke about a lot of different things. He's a really nice guy. I'm very much looking forward to actually being able to hopefully one day meet him in person and record some things with him. Yeah, I hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
And then that'll work.
Sweet. Clip my waveform there, but never mind.
Yeah, me too. All right, man. So thank you for doing this.
Not a problem. Good to chat.
Yeah, absolutely. We've messaged a few times on Instagram, and yeah, it's good to actually have a proper conversation with people like yourself. And yeah, I've been doing this podcast for a while now, but I stopped for ages for no reason, really. So I thought, you know what, no one's doing anything. Why not get some people on the podcast again? So
it's cool to chat to people. I think there's quite a good community sort of in the audio world amongst producers and engineers. I feel like it's a lot more, maybe compared to a few years ago, and this is kind of a thing I've had with bands as well. Like back when I was active in bands, there tended to be more like rivalries. Yeah. But now, I don't know what's shifted it, but everyone's kind of a lot more friendly with each other. Everyone's bigging each other up, helping each other out. And it's just really cool.
So that's something that I noticed as well, because I used to, before I like started recording and going down this line of work, I used to make like drum and bass music and like was kind of heavily influenced by the EDM scene, and was like kind of getting somewhere with it, like producing music. I was getting like, you know, a fair bit of recognition, and it was going well, but like all the producers were just so bitchy. And like not everyone, because there were nice people, but like I just found that if you asked a producer for help or something, you were stuck on something, there was always like that vibe that they just really didn't want to help you, and they like were just kind of every man for themselves in that kind of situation.
Yeah, but if I give away my secrets, then I'm not going to be good anymore.
That's
and this
it,
guy's
that's
gonna
it.
Overtake
I actually had one. I actually had one guy say that to me once. Like when I first started out, I messaged him. I said, "Can you like, you know, give me some feedback on this track that I'm working on?" And he goes, "Do you think Skrillex gives feedback and tells all his secrets? Do you think that he'd be where he is now if he told all his secrets to people and gave all his, you know, all his tricks and tips away?" And I'm like, really? Just fuck it. I don't want your help. That's fine. Just whatever. But like, yeah, it is good. Like this community definitely is looking out for each other. But yeah, I know what you mean by, it seems like more recently, I think since lockdown and, you know, the whole COVID thing come about, people are definitely willing to just chat to people and help a bit more, I think.
Yeah, I think, like, particularly, I mean, from the producer side, maybe there used to be, and maybe I was kind of like this when I first started out, and it was a case of you're always chasing work, so you don't want to give away too much, because then you might not be able to work with this person because someone else is going to work with them. And
it's
a mindset thing, and there's loads of people are making music, loads of people are wanting to record and put songs out, so there's plenty to go around, you know, for everyone. And you've got resources now, like Nail the Mix, URM, Control Room Group, yeah. where everyone just kind of shares information. And, you know, we all hear things differently. We all do things differently. And you're never going to exactly copy or replicate what someone else is doing. You're always going to put your own spin on it.
I
think it's, you know, you can message people like on Instagram, and I've done it before where like I've messaged like Boba Chow, who's one of my favorite mixers and producers, and asked him something about drums, and he's gone, yeah, well, I did this and this, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool when that happens. Like I've for this podcast, I've messaged like a bunch of people since I've decided I'm gonna start doing it again, and I'm like surprised that the people that have said yes, I really wasn't expecting it, and they're like, yeah, absolutely, I'll be down to chat with you for like an hour or whatever. I'm like, fuck me, okay. All right, let's do it. I just really didn't expect it, but I suppose it just goes to show that like all the anxiety that I've had in the past about messaging people just asking for help really isn't needed. Like people, you know, they're either going to say yes, and then, you know, you're happy, you've got some help from someone that you know, look up to, or you're in the same position that you were in before. There's no reason to be like scared to reach out to someone, you know, and just chat to someone like me and you were doing. It's just fun to chat.
The worst they can say is no, or don't reply. And what, like you said, you're same position, but they might say yes. It's the same with, you know, some people ask, oh, how do you get work or whatever? And well, you could just message people and ask if they want to record. What are they doing? What's the worst they're going to say? Yeah. No, we've already got someone, or we've got something lined up. Okay. But if you don't ask, you don't know. So
that's it. Yeah. That's something that I need to work on, is like asking bands to work with me, because I always feel a bit awkward doing it. Especially when I was starting out, I'd hate messaging bands. But like recently I've been messaging just saying like, hey, now things are kind of looking like they're getting back to some sort of normality. You know, I really like your guys' work. If you need mixing or mastering something, you know, keep me in mind and hit me up when you get to that point. And like, it's just not being pushy about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really recent thing that I've, you know, started doing, really. I've always felt a bit strange about messaging bands and kind of prompting them to work with me, but
yeah, I think it is. It can feel awkward, especially when you first start doing it. I was very similar. It's like, oh, you know, I can't message them because they might say no, they might reject me, and it's that fear of rejection. But like we said, in actual fact, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Well, you're where you are now anyway. But the best thing that could happen is they turn around and go, yeah, we want to work with you. And I've picked up, you know, quite a few bands that I've worked with now where I've just dropped them a message and I've said, look, really like your songs. I think we'd be really cool if we'd work together. Are you working on any new music? Sometimes it comes off, sometimes it doesn't, but it's just building those connections and that kind of networking, especially now when, you know, we can't go out to shows and we can't meet people in person. So the only way you can do it is online. Instagram is, I was actually on a video call yesterday, like a business group I'm in, and they were talking about this and someone was doing it on Facebook, but I find Instagram is my most active platform. Most bands are active on there and always chatting.
Yeah, me too.
So
I just
slide them a little message, but what I always try to do is actually, I'm not just cold messaging. I'll listen to the band first and I'll think, right, yeah, we could do something here, because you can get an idea of where they are. I mean, some bands you'll go on there and they've got a really small following, but they're working with some massive producer, and I'm like, yeah, maybe that's not the right person. But then someone else, they'll have like a little rough demo up, and I think, you know, we could do something like this. We could work together and just start a conversation.
Yeah.
I try not to just go in with like a cold message and go, hi, I'm a mixer, come and work with me. Say, look, I've listened to this track. I think it's really cool. I've worked with this band who are kind of similar. Maybe you might want to check out some of my work. Are you looking at recording something? Just to try and get a conversation
chat,
going.
Yeah. That's how all relationships are formed at the end of the day, isn't it? You know, if you have a chat with them and like don't make it seem like you're just there to get business, then they feel more invited, and you're basically just kind of inviting them into a friendship, which could then potentially turn into some business for you later down the line. But ultimately, you're doing it because you like the sound of their music in the first place and you think that you could, you know, help them in some way.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if we don't work together, then a lot of these bands that I'll message are ones that I quite like anyway. Like, I wouldn't go and find out music that I don't want to work with. So even if we don't end up working together, they've got me listening to their music anyway and, you know, posting stuff when it comes out, even if I'm not working with it, because I'm genuinely invested in music and stuff like that. So it's win-win, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. So I wanted to know how you got into mixing and producing in the first place. What's your story?
Yeah, well, it's probably a fairly familiar story to a lot of people, in that I started off playing in bands, which is obviously a common thing. And back when I was sort of in sick form in school, we used to set up in our common room. We used to get all the mics that we could, set up all on the drums, guitars and everything, and record it through the desk onto like a mini disc player. And it sounded absolutely terrible. But at that time, there was like no kind of music scene around where we were. And it was kind of pre-MySpace era, sort of showing my age. And we'd just burn these stuff onto CD ourselves and then sell them for like 2-3 quid at a show. And then it got to end of my A-levels and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I just happened to flick through this uni prospectus and I saw music systems engineering degree in there at Bristol Uni. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. Went up, checked it out. Anyway, went and did this degree, which I look back on it now and I just feel like it was kind of useless.
I kind of did the same. Like, I didn't do a degree, but I did music technology at college. And I dropped out after 2 years because it was just where I'd been producing like drum and bass and things like that before. It was literally going over all the basic stuff, like how to use an EQ and a compressor. Yeah. And I'm like, I know this. And it was just really frustrating. I wasn't learning anything. So I had a real chat with my tutor. And I said to him, I was like, look, is there any point in me doing this last year? Because I'm ready to just like go out there and start recording. Like, this is what I really want to do. I've got like, luckily I had some money put aside where I could build up a studio and just do it. And he was like, to be honest, you should just do it. Like, why wait a year when you could, you know, just be out there and learning more by actually doing than, you know, us having to teach a syllabus that we have to stick to.
Yeah, I completely agree. And now there's so much content available online and courses and things that are way cheaper than going to uni or anything like that. And I look back, like, I don't necessarily regret going because I did learn a lot and I learned, you know, keeping myself accountable and hitting deadlines and doing all that work and everything that went with it. But in terms of real world audio experience that I can bring in now, there's like, I've learned pretty much everything myself.
You learned almost like the business side of things by doing it.
Not even that. It was more of a technical degree, so I learned tons of about electronics and mathematics and digital signal processing and stuff. I've forgotten all of it now, but it was a really technical degree, and the actual audio production side of it was only a really small part. And they said, well, you know, you've only got a couple of these modules, the rest of it is technical because you need to be technical in this business, so you've got to kind of learn yourself. But the facilities at the uni, there wasn't enough to go around. There was only one studio with two control rooms for like 3 years worth of courses at the time. So even if you wanted to get in there, it was so rare that it was actually available. So I kind of came out of uni and went traveling and did all that stuff, and then came back from traveling and started playing in a band again. And during that time in the band, it was, I want to make it as a rock star. I want to do all this stuff. Reality is, like, you know, we weren't good enough. We had a great time. The songs weren't good enough. But we had a great time doing it. But during all that, I would record all the demos and write most of the songs. So I was kind of keeping my chops up. We went in a couple of recording studios and, you know, I'd always be really keen and be like, oh, what are you doing here? What are you doing with that? How are you miking up the drums? So I always had that in the back of my mind that it was something that I was interested in, but I was never actively recording other people. So when that band kind of died off, I wasn't, the living situation at the time, I didn't have a room, like we were sharing, we were doing a house share, didn't have a room for with a particularly good setup or anything. We ended up moving house and buying our own house, which is what I'm in now. This is like 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, and I finally had a room and a space that I could set up, get some speakers. And at the start it was just, again, kind of recording myself, but then I thought, well, I want to record other bands. So I started messaging local bands and taking my little setup out to a practice room and setting up mics and recording them in that space. So it's kind of in the last maybe 6 years that I've actually taken it seriously.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a case of recording as many people as you can and doing as much as you can to advance your skills to kind of where I am now, really.
Yeah. And so when did you get to the point where you're like, right, I need to find a studio space to work out of more permanently?
That was probably about four years ago. And initially, I had another band that I was playing in at the time. And it's like, right, we want to record some drums, but we want to record them well, not with my kind of dodgy mic setup and crappy little Presonus interface. So it was just jumped on Google and found this studio called Orchard Studios, which is about half an hour drive from where I am. So it's near Glastonbury.
Oh, cool.
That sort of way. And yeah, we hired the studio out, went in, recorded some drums, and I got on really well with James and Charlotte, who own the studio. And from then on, it was like my go-to spot. I wasn't wanting to go out and take my little microphone set up to a practice room when we could pay, you know, not a grand sum of money and actually have a cool space and good microphones and some outboard gear and a desk. And since then, I've got, you know, I get on really well with James. We've got a really good friendship. So he'll get inquiries and kind of send them my way. And then I might find someone approach me, but it's not quite what I would do. So I said, we'll speak to James at Orchard. Yeah. And it's a really great space, really cool studio. And then for mixing and stuff, I just bring it home and I've got my own little mix set up here. And it works really well.
Yeah, it's a really weird experience going into a new studio to record. Like, you're a bit out of your depth. You're like, yeah, I don't really know if I can do this. Like, all this new equipment that you've never touched before, and you don't really know how it's all rooted, and it's all just completely backwards to how you work at home. Yeah. But it is really good fun, like, working in a new space.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is what I've got here. I've got a really small room, but, you know, there's enough room to have a sofa in, and yeah, I've got my desk and set up and stuff in here. So I have had people in here, and if I know the band well enough, we've worked together, or kind of I know them personally, I don't mind bringing a few people back here because we can track guitars through the Kemper. I can do vocals here. Obviously can't do drums, but for like a new band that I've never worked with before, I don't want to bring them to my house and cram them in this small little room. So yeah, I'd rather budget that in my price and hire out this cool studio with all this gear. But you're right, like, kind of, it's a feeling that I have almost every time I start a new project or start a new mix. I sit down, I'm like, how the hell do I do this? Where do I start?
Yeah.
And yeah, I kind of thought, oh, maybe this is just me, like, does everyone have this? But then I listen to even professional like mixes and stuff, and they're like, yeah, I sit down when I start the mix and I think, what the hell do I do next? And, but then you just get into a flow and you stop thinking about it too much and just do it.
I think that's just part of the job, just self-deprecating.
Yeah.
Just like, and just being like, the amount of times I've got like, you know, a couple hours into a mixing session, I'm like, God, that sounds like arse. And like, then you have to go back and like just start again. But I think that self-deprecation, it's just part of what we do.
Yeah.
It's just, nothing is ever going to be good enough because we're all perfectionists at heart.
And absolutely.
We want to sound like our favourite mixes. But it's never going to happen because you're mixing different songs by a different band that was recorded with different equipment, you know.
100%.
It's never going to happen.
And I do it frequently. I beat myself up and I'll, you know, you'll get through a mix and then you'll A-B it against something like by Chris Lord Alge and you're like, damn, why doesn't mine sound as good as that? It's like because they
because
did it.
Because you're
not like,
Chris Lord Alge.
Yeah, exactly. And but, you know, it's great to have that bar and push yourself to reach those levels. But I think, yeah, you've got to be honest with yourself and be realistic. And of course, try and make things as good as you can be. And, you know, now I kind of think, well, I look at the frequency content and the balance and kind of compare in that way. But you're right, you're recording a different band, different instruments. Everything's completely different. So you're never going to get exactly the same. But then you listen back to mixes that you did even 6 months or a year, 2 years ago and hear how far you've come on personally.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the eye opener for me. And I think, okay, yeah, maybe I can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm in the same position. Like, at the moment, there's stuff that I finished that I'm waiting for the bands to release, and they're, you know, trying to sort out labels and things like that, and it's just taking a while. And I finished something up the other day, and then I listened back to something that I finished maybe a month ago, an album that I finished, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I should remix this album.
Yeah, the same feeling.
But I'm not gonna, because it's all part of the story, isn't it?
Yeah.
But,
and it's funny.
And I think the mix that I've done on that, sorry to interrupt, I think the mix that I've done on that album is, it suits the album perfectly. Like it doesn't sound maybe as good as the mixes that I've done more recently, but it suits the album down to a T, and that's the sound that we were going for. So that's kind of how I've, you know, rationalized it in my head and being okay with just leaving it how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you could listen back to some recordings, like who's the guy on YouTube? I can't think of his name now, but he does song breakdowns and stuff, and he broke down the mix for At the Drive-In, One Arm Scissor, and Rick Beato, that's the guy. So, and then he broke it down and he just played like the guitars, and you listen to the guitars and they're out of tune and there's bleed coming through everything. And you listen to them like, and then you start to analyze it and you think, that's not actually a great recording. The mix is quite cool, but it suits the song. The song is so energetic. And when you're listening from a listener perspective, you're not hypercritical and analyzing all that stuff, because as producers and engineers, that's what we do a lot of the time. It's, how did they get that kick drum?
It really annoys me.
Yeah, it does. It ruins it ruins the listening experience being a producer.
I listened to the new Architects album this morning.
Oh, that's good.
And I just couldn't stop myself from analyzing it. I was like, oh, that snare sounds really good on that fill. I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's like a full blend of the snare trigger or if it's just the trigger. And like, I wonder what that bass was being run through. Oh, that's really cool. And I'm just like, yo, just listen to the fucking music.
Yeah.
But like, it annoys me. It really annoys me. I wish I could go back or like have just a switch on the side of my head that would turn me back into a child and I could just listen to music for what it is.
That was one thing I remember from uni, my lecturer, literally on the first day, and he's a producer. He produced, and his wife sung Video Killed the Radio Star. So he did that song. Yeah. So like literally first day he was like, right, this career is going to ruin listening to music for you. And you're like, nah, I still love it. But you do. It just changes how you listen to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but there's some bands like Thrice are my favorite band, and I'll just listen to them and I never really analyze it because I love the song so much. But now if I'm flicking through new art, because I'm trying to kind of think, right, what's the trend in how things are sounding now, maybe how am I going to move on and adapt my sound, and you are just analyzing every little thing and kick drums and snare drums and how wide are the guitars.
That's it. Yeah
Yeah,
it's just one of those things that comes with the territory, isn't it? But
yeah
you mentioned earlier that did you say you've been doing this full time for a year?
Yeah, so it's always been something that was a passion. that I wanted to take further and wanted it to be my career. But, you know, it's hard making that leap when you've got a mortgage and a family and you've got this full-time job coming in. It's the golden handcuffs that if you leave that safety net behind, what are you going to do? So, yeah, and to be fair to my wife, like, she put up with me. Literally, I'd work full time and then evenings I'd come out and mix, and then weekends I'd be off and record a band, and didn't have any free time. And then obviously last year coronavirus happened, and I ended up without a job. And we've got a little girl who's just turned two, and kind of we didn't have childcare, so we didn't want to send her to nursery, and like parents being older and so it was like, right, well, it's going to be difficult for me to go out and find another job and have her work and look after our daughter.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll try and pick up more work doing mixing and working with bands. And the first few months, obviously, it was hard because everyone was doing it. But then later on in the year, when we could kind of get back in the studio and record, I was picking up more and more work. And kind of that was May last year. And I've been able to, kind of supported myself up through to now, and I've got bookings through later on this year. So having been able to do that and work for myself, it's like, well, I never want to go back to having a having a boss.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool that out of, you know, this horrible thing that we're all going through, you've actually, that's actually helped you in a way. Because if, you know, if it hadn't happened, you'd probably still be doing that job and you wouldn't have even given it a go.
Exactly.
So it almost forced you. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be, I'm kind of obviously trying to build up work and get more work because I'm not earning as much as I was doing this other job by a long way, but I'm earning enough to pay the bills and to kind of live, which is the main thing. And if I've been able to do that in this really challenging environment, I feel like, well, if once things start to get better, hopefully my thinking is if I keep working hard and putting out good stuff, then more people want to work with me and I can kind of continue it on and grow from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think if you're doing, you know, pretty decent out of it, you know, in trying times like this, I think once we open back up and everything's kind of back to normal, I think you'll be doing really well with it.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
One thing I noticed when I found you was I found you on social media on Instagram. You are fucking on it with social media and I love it. And I just really want to know how you do it. Do you have like a schedule that you stick to or like?
Kinda. So I'm really interested in kind of I've never done any kind of marketing degrees or courses or anything like that, but I'm just quite interested in music marketing and how bands should promote and push themselves. And I kind of use that as the thought process behind what I want to do online. And some people do stuff like they'll have these brilliant formatted pictures and they'll have this regular content stream of blogs and things that they'll write and put out. I'm not that dedicated. I'd like to be, but I'm not. I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
So I just think in the back of my mind, right, I need to be posting something to tell people that I'm here a couple times, like 3-4 times a week. I use Instagram as my main thing. That's linked to my Facebook. But I try and make it so that it's not just a picture of like a piece of gear. It will be like, this is what I'm doing, or this is what I'm listening to, and make it kind of engaging. But then I'll also use like the stories function and I'll try and keep that a bit more personal and put like funny stuff up or memes or whatever, but keep posting that because then you're kind of top of mind with people. And all these, like we were saying about all these people that you're making kind of connections with and talking to, if you're then active on social media and then engaging with them, and then the time comes around where they want to record some music,
you're fresh in their head.
And then you're popping up, you're kind of keeping yourself visible.
Yeah.
But I try and tell bands, like, I set up a Facebook group to try and share information and motivate and just something to do as well, bands and artists, for when they release music. And it's something that I kind of preach on there, that they need to be doing. They need to be posting regularly and trying to be engaging with people and grow their following. So I kind of feel like, well, if I'm telling people to do that, I kind of need to be doing some of that myself as well.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about going into some sort of like band management or something? Because
yeah, maybe.
It seems like something like, that your skill set would probably lend itself quite well to.
I think management, I'm not sure. I kind of have in the back of my mind that maybe one day I'd like to start a label. So, yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm putting all these pieces together that and learning things that hopefully further down the line, once I've established what I want to do, because my main career goal is I want to be a producer. Like, I've got kind of goals. I would like to have my own studio eventually. I'd like to be nominated for some sort of award. Like, it's something in the back of my mind. Like, I'm a way off of it, but it's kind of one of those things that's a goal further ahead. So I don't really want to get distracted with it. Like in the past, I was distracted by having a band, and that was kind of my main thing. Whereas now, this is my main thing. I don't want to kind of divulge myself too far.
Yeah.
Doing other things, but maybe in the future, some sort of label or management thing. Yeah, possibly. For now, I just kind of want to motivate and help people and share this kind of information, because I listen to audiobooks and podcasts and YouTube videos, and I'll just go like, right, guys, look at this guy's saying da da da,
yeah,
go check it out, try it out. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's something that I'm not very good at doing is staying motivated. I don't know, it's not that I'm not motivated to do a job, because it, you know, I really want to do this as a career, but I just find myself not keeping up with, you know, things like staying active on Instagram, and like, especially this last year, it's been like obviously shit for everyone. But like, when there's no work coming in, it's just so hard to stay active. Like, I'm just like, what do I post about? And then I see you posting things like, I don't know, doing like tutorials on how to get a good guitar tone or something like that. You've done something along those lines before, I think. But
yeah,
and I'm like, fuck, Joe's doing it again. And then I'm like, why didn't I come up with that idea? And it's almost like whenever I see you post, I'm like, yeah, I should probably post something, because he's on it, and it seems to be working for him. So
it's, yeah, again, I'm the same. Like, there's other people who I'll look at and I'll be like, oh man, they've done this. And like, I saw you put up the other day, you've done a YouTube vid, haven't you?
With, yeah.
Was it drum room thing? Yeah. And stuff like that. But that eats up time, like, to sit down. I don't think people necessarily realize kind of how long these sorts of things, particularly YouTube videos. Like, I've got a friend, shout out Johnny Dibble on YouTube. And he does loads of bass stuff and bass reviews and all sorts. And the amount of time and effort that he puts into doing these videos is incredible. And I'm like, oh man, I wish I could do more of that, but I just don't have the time. Like, I'm looking after my daughter, and then I'm doing this, and then I've got to try and keep a relationship going, you know?
Yeah.
So if I have a moment of inspiration, I'll jump on it.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to be motivated 100% of the time. Funny, like, I watch and listen to a lot of stuff by Gary Vee. I don't know if you've ever seen his stuff, but he's a business guy. But his mantra is constantly put out content and constantly do stuff. And anyway, he put something up yesterday that was, yeah, you're not always going to feel motivated, and that's fine. A lot of the time you just have to push through it. But sometimes it is okay just to be like, oh, do you know what? Fuck it. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
But as long as that doesn't become
human
a habit,
nature, isn't it?
That's... Yeah, and you're right, especially this year with coronavirus. And I sit there sometimes and I'm like, what the fuck am I going to put up and post about? Because I'm in a similar situation, that I've been doing so much mixing at home, how many photos of my, because my setup isn't anything glamorous, can I put up? No one wants to see my Apollo twin like four times.
Yeah, how many
feed,
pictures of my desk can I post? Yeah, I'm kind of, honestly, if you look at my Instagram now, it's just basically just desk pictures and videos of me reamping guitars and that's it. Like, there's...
But I try and think, well, what would I want to interact with bands and musicians and what would they want to see?
Mm.
So that's kind of what I try, and it doesn't always work because sometimes I just don't have anything, so I'll kind of post a picture of my desk or whatever. But that's why I try and I've put up recently a load of pictures from one recording session, which was Kite Thief, and their song actually came out this morning.
Mm.
But they took loads of photos, so I was like, hey, Max, do you want to send me those photos that you took?
Mm.
So he sent me all these cool pictures, and I've just been able to kind of spread those out.
Yeah.
And use those as examples and stuff like that. So it's hard to stay motivated, and you're right, when you haven't got a lot on, but I think that's the case with lots of people. And social media is that really one small part of the world, and not everyone is busy all the time. Some people kind of portray themselves as really busy, but
absolutely, you only post the best things on social media, don't you? You're not going to be like, I don't know, maybe we should do it for like a week. It'd be quite funny if we both just posted like, not done anything today, sat in my pants watching Peep Show, and just see if our like, just check our analytics and see if we've got any more response than normal.
Yeah,
that could be quite a funny experiment.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I don't get too into like the algorithms and stuff like that. Kind of, I know what makes sense from what I've read. I don't delve too deep in it because I don't have a big enough audience. So there's not really that much that you can kind of take from it. I just try and, I just think, right, what if I was in a band and I was looking on Instagram, what would I find interesting? Oh, there's this band in the studio. Oh, this guy's telling me what he did with this band. I'll check them out. And
that's a really good point, actually, because... Kind of I feel like you saying that makes me realize that most of the time I feel like I'm posting on Instagram just for other producers to look at, like, because you know, a lot of my following on Instagram is just producers, and like I follow loads of producers as well. And yeah, I guess that I'm not really posting with bands in my mindset. It's more like posting because some other guy that does the same thing as me might find it cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said that you're... The studio was shut that you're working at. Is that not permanently, just whilst lockdown?
No, yeah, it was just from... So, yeah, James kind of took the decision that they were going to shut down over this period. That we're opening back up next month. So I've got a ton of stuff booked in, which is really cool. But luckily I've had a kind of stream of work coming in to mix, which... It's quite cool because it's something that I'd like to get more just mix work.
Yeah.
Because obviously producing is so much fun, and I love producing, and that's probably, I love being in the studio and working with bands and bouncing ideas off each other, but
yeah,
it does take a lot of time, whereas mixing is already done and I have my setup at home. So, you know, I can just roll out the back door and jump on a mix. And yeah, that a lot of my stuff just comes from word of mouth and like kind of cold outreach. I've tried running like adverts and things like that, and nothing's ever really come of it. Like, you'll get views on the ads,
yeah,
but I've never really got any messaging. So I kind of think, well, I'll focus on where I have been picking up work and what I have been doing well at, and that's just connecting with other people and. Yeah, I think I've kind of wandered off what the question was.
It's all good. I agree with you. I did the whole Facebook promotion things and Instagram promotion things, and it worked for like when I first started, like when I first opened my studio, that worked really well for me. I got quite a lot of work out of just doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, since then, it's just been word of mouth kind of thing. But that's the thing is with word of mouth, you have to stay active,
yeah,
because otherwise it just drops off.
Yep.
You know, there's only so many people you can work with time and time over again they're not going to tell any more people. Like, it's getting new faces in. That's the thing. Like, a lot of the clients that I've had, I've worked with them time and time again. But the amount of new clients that I've never worked with before has always been quite low. It's always just been the same people coming back, which is, you know, flattering because they're coming back. But yeah, it's just, I guess, trying to keep active to bring new faces in. Yeah. But that's just always the hard thing, isn't it?
It's much, once you've got someone and you've worked with them, it's much easier for you to become their like go-to person, because you've already built that relationship and you've got that trust. Compared to trying to get someone completely new, there's a lot more work that kind of goes into getting a new client.
Absolutely.
One thing that I always try and do is at the end of a project, once everything's happy, all the revisions are done, and they're like, yeah, we're stoked on this. I'll ask them for a review on my like Facebook page, but then I'll also say, look, is there anyone that you know that you think that might benefit from working with me? So I'll get them to give me, if they can, like a couple names of bands, and then I'll contact the bands and say, look, I've just done some work with so-and-so. They said that we might work together going forward. So it's kind of like you're not relying on that band spreading the word of mouth, but you've still got that kind of social proof that you've worked with them. So you can, it's kind of a little bit easier than just a cold message. It's kind of a warm introduction. So yeah, that's something that I found pretty useful as well.
Yeah. God, man, it seems like you, well, it is a business, I suppose, and you treat it like a business, and that's really cool. I mean, there's something that I've never really done. I just do it because I love doing it. But yeah, you, seeing you treat it like, and looking at everything logically and, you know, just thinking like, what can I do to get this person to find someone else for me to work with, and like, you know, getting those clients coming in. Is business something that you kind of dive into quite a bit? Like researching business strategies and things like that?
Yeah, so I did, well, part of my uni course was a small business module. And like now I kind of think, if I'd have done a business degree, my life would have been so much easier. But I kind of came out of uni and I've always worked like office jobs and kind of that kind of environment. So I kind of have taken a lot of what I've learned in the 9-to-5 real world and kind of crossed it over here, and like I've worked in sales and stuff as well, and it's, there are a lot of things that are transferable, because at the end of the day we are selling a service, but what I try and think is that I want to be mates with these people as well. I don't just want to have it like a production line of music. I want to keep that real connection. And I've done there's a course that I've done as well, the Profitable Producer course, which is like a Brian Hood one. I don't know if you've heard the Six Figure Home Studio podcast at all.
I think I've seen you post about it a few times.
Yeah, so that was really good. Like the course, it wasn't cheap, but there's so much good information in there, and that's kind of taught me a lot in terms of strategies and really kind of dedicated to this industry, not just wide business strategies, really focused. And I try and listen to, I've got an Audible subscription because I'm not a big reader. If I sit down and read, I'll just like want to fall asleep within 2 minutes. So I have like an audiobook on like 2x speed and you can just kind of chomp through those when you're washing dishes or when you're in the shower or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of use that of like business books and marketing books and things like that. And it kind of, I guess it all just drips in the back of your mind so that when you're thinking about doing stuff, you've got all these other little things that you've maybe learned along the time, kind of pushing you along in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. I need to get on that shit. Like one of the reasons why I'm doing podcasts is because I want to learn from people that, I look up to and think are doing really well in the industry. Like it's a bit selfish of me really, but
no, that's cool.
Other people want to hear this stuff as well.
Absolutely. And it's content marketing, isn't it? That you're producing something for other people to absorb, but at the same time you're getting your name out there, you know? So
yeah, and also learning things myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so this is a question that I'm going to ask everyone.
Cool.
That comes on the podcast. What is one thing that you wish someone had told you at the beginning of your producing journey?
One thing that someone had told me at the beginning would be, you will always think that your mixes suck.
Yes.
Like, I always thought that I'd get to a point of like, yes, this is it. I can finally do it. Yeah. I'm finally good at this thing. But the reality is that no matter what you do, you'll do it. And then you'll listen to it a couple of weeks later and be like, oh man, that sucks. And yeah. It's like, it's just this horrible feeling that you kind of go through from time to time. But if someone has said to me, and again, it's one of those things that even the pro guys, when you listen to, they'll say the same things, that they'll think that their mixes are terrible.
Mm.
And I was listening to a podcast with Sam Guyana the other day, and he's doing some really good stuff. So he just, like Silverstein and people like that. And he was saying that everyone will go through this, everyone will reach this thing where they'll do a mix and it'll be perfect and it'll be brilliant.
Mm.
And then they'll go on to do the next mix and it won't quite as good. And you'll always be chasing this mix that you did like back in the past, but you can never quite kind of get there. Yeah. Which I thought was a really interesting point, that, yeah, you might have this perfect song and then the next one you do, you're like, why isn't this as good as that one? And yeah. it's just maybe, again, different people, different instruments.
Yeah, there's so many factors time, that contribute just, to it, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's maybe something. It's, you're always going to have this self-deprecating view on yourself, yeah. But maybe just keep it in check. And yeah, everyone's running their own race and in their own lane. So
that's it.
Just do your best.
And like, I think that's another important thing to remember, is that you shouldn't compare yourself to other producers or engineers, because everyone has a different way of working.
Yeah.
Everyone approaches different situations completely differently and will always get different results because of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're never going to be Nolly or Chris Lord Alge because we aren't them. We have completely different mindsets.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got to focus on. And that's something that I, you know, took a while for me to learn, but like, the only thing that's going to make us stand out is doing things the way we do it.
Yeah.
And that's how we make our sound or style of working and producing.
It's funny, because I never thought that I necessarily had a style or a sound or anything like that. And then there's a band that I work with, and they're called Alter Apex. I've just done a track for them, and they do this like YouTube thing every week where they'll get on Zoom together and they'll play these songs back that they found by different artists, and then they'll record it and put it up. And they've had a couple of my tracks that I've produced and mixed, and they were just saying that a lot of the stuff that I do has this kind of, they were referencing bands like Say a Sin and people like that, saying, oh, it sounds kind of like this, it sounds kind of like that. And I've never told them what kind of music I'm into, but they're referencing these bands that I really like. And I thought, okay, so maybe that is coming through on what I'm doing without me necessarily thinking about it.
Well, yeah, it must be. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I find myself doing that. I'm a massive, like, I listen to all sorts of different music, like from metal to jazz fusion and like just all sorts of weird shit. But like, I'll find myself doing that, like, oh, the way I've mixed that guitar sounds a bit like this band or that band. And it's just that, obviously, that is what is going to happen. If you listen to music, it's going to influence you without you realizing it, and you're going to gravitate to that sound because it's what you love the most.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like, talking about these other mixes and stuff, you watch tutorials and they'll be like, CLA's fucking cranking like 15k at 8 dB, and it'll be like, yeah, that sounds amazing. You think, yeah, that sounds cool, and then you'll go to a mix and do it and be like, oh my god, that sounds terrible. But then
absolutely but then
you're like, oh, but maybe if I only do it 3 dB, oh, that actually sounds kind of cool, and why is he doing that? And it's like, one thing that he does, like CLA in particular, is after his mix bus compression, where he puts a pull tech after, and he boosts like 30 dB to put all this bass back in it.
Mm.
But, and I was like, well, why is he doing that? But then you think of the rationale behind it, and it's like, well, he's then mixing into his mix bus compressor, which is taking away some of the low end. So he's pushing that low end back in. But then while he's mixing, he's already knowing that he's going to put that low end back in. So all of these decisions along the line, he knows what he's going to do further down. So I'm like, right, okay, that makes perfect sense. So now, like, I'll go into track drums or whatever, and further down the line when I mix, I know I'm going to, I don't know, boost the snare 8 dB by 8K, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'll know that at the time of tracking, so then you can pick a particular mic or do some EQing at the time. So you're kind of
learning
the, taking, maybe it doesn't work exactly what he's doing, but the process and the thought process behind it then influences what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've had situations where I've been in a studio with a band and, like, you know, maybe they're not too happy with the way it's come out or something, like a certain section of a song, but in my head I'm like really hyped up because I know in my head I know how it's going to sound when I mix it, and when I'm done with it I can literally hear it in my head instead of hearing what's in front of me, and I'm like, guys, it's going to sound sick, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, I can literally hear how massive this section is going to sound, it's going to be fine, promise.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with a producer. You can have this thing in your head, it's getting it out to the band. And the, again, referencing this Kite Thief track that came out today, they sent me the demos, and there was part of the song, and in my head, as soon as I heard it, I had this vocal product, like, arrangement in my head. I was like, right, this is what we've got to do. And they had on their demo was like one line. So we got in the studio and I was like, right, Ellen, I need you to sing it like this and then like this. And it got to the end and we had like 12 different vocal parts, and she was singing them going, really, do you think this is going to work? And I'm like, honestly, just trust me, because out of context, singing this stupid little falsetto line that sounds weird on its own, and then get everyone back in the control room and hit play with this vocal thing, and it's like, finally, this thing I've had in my head for like weeks since she sent me the demo is finally here. And then they're like, ah, right, yeah, now we get it, you know.
So I had that with a so the new Hounding album that isn't out yet, there's a track on there, and there's this like big, it's this big section in it where it's like in between two choruses, and it's like got strings and all sorts of shit along with like the guitars and massive drums. And in my head, I could hear this like guitar solo that is not something that they'd normally do at all. But I was like, can I try something? Can we try something? And he was like, I feel like the guitarist was a little bit apprehensive to give it a go because it is so far from what they'd normally do and how we'd normally play. But we did it, and it worked, and it just brought out this completely new feeling to that whole section. And like at the end of it, we're like, I just looked at him, I was like, how sick is that? Like,
I love moments
it's
like that.
Just but I was just so determined to get him to do it. I was like, please, just do it, please. And he's like a really good mate of mine, so I was being a bit like bit of a dick to him. I was like, just fucking do it. And eventually we got the take, and it just sounded, it just brought this whole new element that we wouldn't have, just feeling to the song that wouldn't have been there before.
I always say to bands, I always say, look, I've got this idea. If you don't like it, that's absolutely fine. It's at the end of the day, it's your song. But if we try this, the trick is to kind of sometimes make the band think that it's their idea, not your idea. But that's another reason why I think bands benefit from working with a producer, because obviously anyone can record at home now because stuff's so easily affordable. But what you don't have is that external perspective. And this is something that was a real eye-opener when one of my old bands went to, like, literally our first proper producer. And we went in and recorded these songs one day. And then we came back the next day and he'd done all these extra production elements on top of it. And we were like, holy shit, this is so cool. It's moved the song onto a different level. But he's obviously...
Well, it's just bringing a fresh mind into it. Because obviously when you're writing songs as a band, or... you know, as an artist or whatever, it's only that group of people that are thinking about this song, and they get so used to hearing it in a certain way that anything out of the way that they hear it either seems wrong or just too far-fetched for this song that they've, you know, grown. And that often bands are really, you know, it depends. Sometimes you get bands that are really happy to for you to intervene and make changes to their songs, because maybe that's a reason why they've come with you to record, because they know that you can, you know, help evolve their songs a bit more. But other bands literally just want you there to hit record and put microphones up and capture their performance, and really don't like don't like you messing with their songs. But and for those kind of people, I say, look, can we just try it? And if we don't like it, then I'll shut up and we'll just record it your way and that's it.
Yeah, completely. It depends. That's something, yeah, you learn with time. You judge the situation. This is why when I work with a new band, I will always have a conversation with them before we get in the studio, so we get to know each other and you can have these kind of conversations. And what I've started doing is, because everyone can pretty much record their own demos at home now, I'll get them to send me a demo and I'll drop it in Logic. I'll put a load of markers in, kind of where the chorus is and verses and da-da-da. And then I'll have a couple of listens through, make my notes, and then I'll get the microphone set up and I'll record the screen and me talking through their song. So I'll be like, okay, this is cool. That maybe the chorus is a little bit long. So if we shorten the chorus, and I'll literally chop the waveform up and move it and play it back, and then they can hear it and hear my rationale. So ahead of time, I've already got them thinking about this sort of thing. Or maybe they'll be like one little section of this song. They'll do, and I've had this before as well, where there's like this guitar lick that's like two bars and it happens once in the song and that's it. But the band are so used to having this one little bit that isn't the main part of the song. But then to someone else hearing that, I'm like, that little two bar lick is the best thing about the whole song. You need to make that eight bars, and that needs to be the intro and then the post chorus and then the outro and this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden the song is just gone up a notch. And that's from having that external kind of perspective. At the same time, I always say to them, if you don't like it, fair enough. You know, it's your song. It's fine. I want you to be happy.
And I found actually more often than not, when a band, like you say, has like a little lick or just something in that song that just only pops up once, they often do it on purpose. They often like, oh, that'd be really cool if that just happened once and then never happened again. But because they're thinking about that certain section so much, they actually end up writing something that's really sick and should be used more than once, but they're sticking to their original idea of just having it pop up once in the song and then not be heard again. It's quite funny how
people want to hear that. People want to hear that thing happen again. That's why you have like extended choruses on the end, because people want to hear this cool bit that they love, you know? If you're, you know, this really weird progressive band that literally does that, then fair enough. But if you're, like, I predominantly work with sort of like pop rock alt bands, and it's like there's a formula kind of for a reason. And you can still get creative within it, but this formula works because people like to listen to it. You know, go and listen to the top 10 songs on Spotify and you'll kind of hear it. So yeah, that's my two cents on that.
you mentioned that everyone has access to home recording now. Do you think that now so many people are recording at home and then sending, I mean, pretty much all my work that I've had over lockdown has been people recording at home and then sending me stems to mix. Do you think that's going to be more of a common thing?
It depends. I think for kind of singer-songwriters, yeah, maybe. But for bands, I don't think so. Because part of the fun thing about being in a band is that camaraderie and getting together and the banter and all of that. And people, there's only so much of that you can do over Zoom or over Messenger, you know. People like to get together. It's the same with drums. Like, if you, obviously you can record, you can do program drums easily and it can sound amazing. But most people, most drummers want to play drums on their record, you know. So I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think that home recording has made it easier for people to do demos and for people on lower budgets. But I think for bands that kind of we're working with, they'll always want to go in the studio and work with a producer. But it also opens up now that people've seen what's possible, that you can work with people further afield so much easier. So it's kind of yes and no, I guess, is kind of what I'm saying. The only thing with the home recording stuff is it really kind of lowers the bar in terms of quality. A lot of the time you'll get vocal tracks that are tracked on microphones that you can kind of make them sound good, but there's so much more work and stuff that's clipped and guitar tones that have just, you've got noises and pops that, yeah, as a producer, your ears tuned in to hear that and go, right, we need to do this again. Whereas your average listener maybe doesn't know that that's going to be a problem further down, yeah, the line.
Yeah. I kind of love it though. Like, I love the challenge of getting a really shitty, yeah, stem and being like, right, I've got to make this sound good. Game on, let's go. And
yeah,
it just makes it so much more rewarding when you do make it sound good at the end. Like, I to be honest, I find that a bit more rewarding than if I'd recorded it myself, like, and then, you know, taking it home to mix. Yeah. It's someone recording something that they don't really know what they're doing. They've just plugged their jack into the fucking interface and hit record in some free software and then sent you a stem. But like, yeah, like you say, if I was there when they were recording it, I probably would have gotten to do it again and, you know, maybe like tried a different guitar or, you know, all sorts of things, some pedals or something like that. But yeah, it's just the whole not knowing what you're going to get when you agree to doing it.
Yeah.
I find it quite exciting. I'm like, oh, right, I'm getting some stems sent to me today. What's it going to be? And then, be shit.
Yeah, you do it and send it back over and they think you're some kind of wizard. Like, oh my God, yeah, I never knew I could sound this good.
Yeah, that's it. Well, we're at about an hour now, so cool, man. That's probably pretty good, man.
Yeah, it's been a really cool chatting with you. We've covered some interesting stuff. Hopefully,
absolutely,
you and the listeners can maybe take some stuff away. But I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Absolutely. And when we can, we should meet up and record some shit together or
absolutely
something.
Absolutely, yeah. 100%. I can't really wait to...
Yeah, that's something that I want to do, like, even more now than ever. It's like, when I can, I just want to work with other producers and just, like, assist on things and, like, just go to all the studios and just do shit.
I've thought about the same thing, yeah. Maybe we should get, like, a band of producers and, like, hire a studio for the weekend and record this, like, the most amazing song ever.
Super group.
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right, man. So we'll do a fake bye now and then I'll talk to you in a second anyway.
Cool. All right.
All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. That's been Joe. You can find him on Instagram and everywhere else. It's Joe Marsh Producer?
Joe Marsh Recording.
Joe Marsh Recording. Okay, cool. Nice one. Cheers, Joe.
Cool. All right, no worries, take it easy.